John Paul Gutschke. Let me start. Is it Gutschke? Is
that yes.
It? Gutschke. It was cool to be Catholic?
Yes.
Okay. Well, John Paul Gutschke, welcome to Power and Witness. You've been on before. You've been on Life on the Rock. You were a former Cool to be Catholic winner. You're here at the network having a remembrance of that.
Yes.
And promotion. And I wanted to sit down with you again and talk about film and art, media and stuff. And we were just having a great discussion about different aspects of it. But overall, could you give us like the Catholic approach to film? Or first, maybe let's talk about the greatness of film.
Yes.
Film has got us by the throat. We
yes.
love it. Why do we love it so much?
Well, film is a tremendous art form. I like to kind of champion it as the highest art form in some ways, just because it combines all the different art forms. It combines drama, it combines storytelling, you know, literature, it combines painting, music, philosophy, all these different ways of thinking about life. It really is just a metaphor for human existence, and it's so immersive. It's really quite profound, and it transports you in a way to another universe unlike any other medium can. So you read a book, and that's really awesome. Books are great, and they can transport you, but it takes a certain act of the imagination and just your own power of thinking, which is a good thing. Like, people should keep reading, and that's awesome, and that inspires great films. But what film does that's unique is that it involves more of the senses. So, you know, when you hear the soundtrack, when you hear the characters, when you're hearing the environment, the sound effects of what they're going through, you're actually watching it unfold. It brings you into that reality in an immersive way where it's more direct, and it's very condensed, and it's heightened, and you're able to feel something on an emotional level unlike other mediums can provide. So I think that film has this perennial draw, and it's a relatively recent art form compared to the other art forms, but because of the technology that we have, that we're able to combine these differing art forms together and tell these stories in a way that are so captivating, it's really something quite beautiful and novel and unique. So that's why we love films, and they stand the test of time. You can go back and you can replay it and re-enter into these scenes and these moments that have real impact. So yes, film is quite a blessing and quite an awesome art form.
You know, it hit me recently too, you know, just to look at, especially like America, you know, our obsession with movies, and but it just has been that way for decades now. And I wonder sometimes too if it's like a hungering for the more. You know, we have difficulties, we have a toil aspect of our life, and the gospel speaks about the more. You know, more will be given to us, and like there's a spiritual hunger for fulfillment and things. And in some ways, it's like movies can show us like this ideal, perfect world. I mean, they got background music. Mm-hmm. I never hear background music in my life. Right? Yeah. They got background music when they do things. And but there's a truth to that. There's a beauty to some of our actions. We do actions in charity, actions in forgiveness. That should have background music. I mean, the background music connotes just the beauty of maybe some acts in our life, you know, some moments in our life that are good. And I think we see that in a film, and it's so powerful. And I'm always struck too that why do certain films grab us, maybe certain scenes grab us and speak to us? And I guess you can make a case. I mean, a good movie, I used to not appreciate like when a movie's popular, but I have come to appreciate that more. No, it's popular for a reason. It did mm-hmm. something that was good movie making, right?
Yes.
And what is that? What makes a good? I know we talked about the values part, but maybe more about the craft itself. What do you think it is that makes a good movie?
I think it's a combination of all of the elements coming together in a way that harmonizes. Mm-hmm. So all the pieces of the puzzle have to fit together, all the lines of the music, you know, they have to work together in tandem in a way that creates a unity that really shines. So if a film is to be great, the story has to feel authentic, whether it's fantasy or a biopic of someone's life. No matter what it is, it really has to be something that resonates, that when you watch it, you're like, oh, I can imagine being in this character's shoes. It elicits our empathy. We think that we can imagine being them. We feel what they're feeling. We put ourselves in their position. It's like, oh, I want this guy to be able to, you know, work things out and get this girl of his dreams, or I want this character to get the dream job that they're looking for. I want this girl to succeed, and you know, you want to see her be able to overcome some obstacle to achieve the next best thing in her life or make a connection or whatever it is. So when we're watching these characters, it has to feel authentic. So the story has to be there. It has to be a compelling story where you see characters going through time and space and obviously going through challenges and surmounting those challenges and, you know, the setbacks that they have. It has to feel very real. It has to elicit our empathy. We connect with them. We see our own lives reflected in them. We put ourselves in their shoes, even if it's something we've never experienced. So that's definitely part of it. It's the story. Then the actors have to convey that story well under the director's leadership. The actors are the ones breathing the life into the story. So we want to see actors that are doing it well, that don't feel like they're putting on airs and they're just pretending, going through the motions. We want to forget that it's a movie and just watch it as if it's real life, but heightened life unfolding. And then, you know, having a good soundtrack. Honestly, soundtracks, in my opinion, have kind of gone down these days. They're less melodic than they used to be. I miss the old style, like leitmotifs, where you have like themes that develop through the story. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, like certain themes associated with certain characters or certain situations, places, or virtues, so to speak. And that's why I love John Williams. He's such a great composer. So the soundtrack adds an element of like the spiritual reality. It makes kind of the reality of life in a film more heightened. So it's not just something that's relatable, that's being breathed life into through the actors, but it's also heightened reality. It's we're imagining life, but life with the deeper reality being shown to us. So in daily life, you might not experience just exactly sort of the spiritual significance of what you're doing. It might be like, oh, I just gave something nice to someone, you know, like someone was hungry and I gave my granola bar to them instead of eating it myself. You put a little soundtrack to it with some music that, you know, effect that resembles, that manifests that character, that you associate that character with that theme, and you put some, you know, moving strings in there, for example.
Or
and
then put just pauses.
Yeah.
I find pauses. So, you know, just like to pause on the moment.
Yes.
And I guess maybe you're letting the actor shine. He might not be saying, it might just be his expression. But I find that so powerful when you slow down the movie and just like be in this moment, sit in this moment for a while with the character. That like always gets my attention.
Yes, that's true. I think that's what's distinctive about film, is that it's showing reality, but it's like a heightened reality. It's taking the most dramatic, it's taking all the experiences of our life that we can relate to, but it's doing it in a way that's more emotional, more
it's
intense.
It's like revealing the drama.
Yes.
It's revealing the real
Indeed.
Drama behind it. Because I think we all, in this veil of tears, you know, we can all identify with struggle.
Yes.
Like you said, it might be a different struggle. But I guess when the movie maker presents the struggle well, we see those qualities that strike us. And I just, you know, we could talk about this too. It's like the whole, the Catholic aspect of it, you know, the Christian drama, that is the ultimate drama, right?
Yes.
All stories and fables will, you know, participate in this in some way, the journey and everything. But I like to think like the loss kind of in the resurrection, you know, it's like that kind of comeback from devastation, from loss.
Sure.
It gives us hope, right?
Yes.
Because we all experience that in life at some points.
Indeed.
Yeah. And Yeah, that's moving. And so as Christians, we that ultimate drama between, you know, the battle from good and evil, and just too that God can redeem our lives, right? And he can bring some fruitfulness out of our lives from the struggle that is always there. But let's talk about like those Catholic themes that can be present in movies.
So with the Catholic perspective, we can talk about it as the Catholic imagination, to take a phrase from one of my professors at Christendom, Dr. McInerney. With the Catholic imagination, it's an overarching worldview that permeates how you tell a story. So it's to have this perspective that there are these ultimate realities, and you can apply it to any story that you tell. So the Catholic imagination is the arch plot, so to speak. It's sin, grace, redemption, heaven, hell, judgment, God's mercy. It's all of these things. It's a perspective that we have an ultimate home, which is in heaven. The way that we live an authentic life of true joy, love, and connection in this life is to submit ourselves to God, to God's plan, following his commandments, loving as he loves, giving of ourselves, and to see that there's an ultimate reality and a purpose and a significance to everything. When the smallest things that we do can have an eternal significance, because with this arch plot, the Catholic imagination, we realize that what we do in life, to take a phrase from Maximus in Gladiator, what we do in life echoes in eternity. That's the Catholic imagination right there, this idea of an eternity, the fact that what we do matters, and that there's a spiritual reality going on at the same time as our physical actions through time and space. And that's why the Catholic imagination, those are the greatest stories that are classics, because there's the ultimate drama of what's going on in the human soul, and this manifests itself both, you know, you can dig deep into the soul and say this is what's going on, the war within our own heart for the good, and then you have the struggles against external obstacles, and they can become as large as a world war. Like, you can go in, you can get depth from going in and going without, and then seeing this play out within the cosmic plan of the divine providence. And I really think that that's why Catholicism has the greatest sort of monopoly, so to speak, on good stories. The best stories that stand the test of time are the ones that are filled with depth, meaning, and that there are many layers going on at once. And you can't get more layers than in a Catholic understanding of the world, where you really understand that all of our actions have significance. We have the sacramental view of reality. What we do physically is tied to the spiritual world, that what we do has, what our actions have spiritual significance. They can bring about great good, great evil. There's hope for redemption. Grace can work even in the midst of suffering. The question of suffering is as old as humanity itself. You know, how do we deal with the problems that befall us that are outside of our control? In Catholicism, we have the answer that we can find redemption and meaning and purpose, even when we're dealt crosses that we don't want, we didn't ask for, we can't make sense out of. And being honest about that and authentic with our struggles, with realizing that our joy is only a foretaste, a microcosm of the great joy that we'll experience in the beatific vision after a life well lived. Like, you can't get a better framework to create stories from than that perspective.
It's the ultimate happy ending, right?
Yes.
And participates in that. And we were talking about Lord of the Rings earlier, you know, the great novels by Tolkien and made to a movie. And one of the things that just strike me about it, you know, Gandalf would often counsel that there's something, I forgot how he described it, something guiding, it was providence.
Like, yes.
God, you know, something was guiding this to a successful conclusion, right? And I think that's so Catholic and Christian, that, yeah, there's a second coming. There's going to be a victory over evil, and yeah, this eternal beatitude. And and two, for me, in that movie, in the books, that, you know, that that Providence, even working with these fallen characters and people, and like Gollum, right? He was told that, you know, he still might have a part to play, that they're
yes.
to have this mercy. And sure enough, without Gollum, the ring doesn't go into Mount Doom. And I can't get my, I remember, I think I was watching like a cartoon version of this, but I don't know if it was before the films, but to realize that, yeah, that Providence is the ultimate actor in this, that it's like God's grace is at the heart of the victory. And because even the good Frodo failed, you know, without Gollum biting off his finger, the ring goes in the volcano. It's just like baffling. I just feel like there's such a depth of mystery there that you can just like ponder that. I don't know, some reason, you know, it's not just like a Agatha Christie plot, you know, okay, this is how the mystery works out. You know, there's some kind of depth there that just speaks of life, right?
Indeed, yes, yeah. Very much.
Yeah. That's powerful. But so as Catholics, we should be producing the best art, right?
100%. We have a calling to create works of beauty and art. It's our calling more than anyone else, because as Catholics, we have the truth. We know for certain that God is on our side, that we have the fullness of truth in the Catholic Church, in Scripture, in the words of Christ to us. And it's just handed down from God himself when he became man. So who more than Catholics have this calling? John Paul II talks about this in his letter to artists. And he talks about how we are, you know, sub-creating with what God has given us. So God created the world, and then we take that creation and we model what he did in creating and create something beautiful ourselves with the material he provided us, and we offer that back to him. So in some ways, we are imitating God's act of creation whenever we create works of art, and we're leading people back to the source of creation through this. And John Paul II and Benedict XVI write beautifully about how art, how it moves us. And with Catholicism, it's very clear that because we have this truth that we are called more than anyone to let this light shine in a very authentic way, in a unique way, in a creatively compelling way, in a way that shines a light on the reality of our human condition, but doing it in a way that, you know, we can always look at it with a fresh eye, with a fresh perspective. G.K. Chesterton, in his work, The Everlasting Man, talks about how, you know, a lot of people just get so used to the nativity story that they kind of turn a blind eye to it. Yeah, yeah, we know what happens. It's like they lose interest. He's like, but what if, you know, you repackage the nativity story with the three wise men, but, you know, maybe they all come from China and there's like some new twist. And he talks about how if you create a fresh perspective for the same truth, this can attract people's attention. So I think that as artists, we can always go back to the ultimate truth, but continually do it in a fresh and unique and exciting way that allows people to really enjoy it and be compelled by that truth and that beauty, because beauty is the visible form of the good, and we can show the good visibly in so many differing ways. And that's what's awesome about being an artist, about being a Catholic, and being a Catholic artist.
Yeah, the creativity is just unlimited, what you could bring to that. And in some ways, it seems almost God-given. I know you can see like how you can see how they get better, you know, as they go on and stuff. But part of me, though, thinks there's some kind of genius there that can translate this into art, like the story or the, you know, into a movie. Do you agree with that? Or is it, I mean, I know, like, one of my favorite writers would say, is that great writers are made, they're not born. But sometimes I look at some of these talented people, they seem like they just have a gift, you know, like
sure.
making artistically beautiful. Yeah. So.
I think that God creates each one of us unique, obviously. Mm-hmm. We are all made in God's image and likeness. But the way that we reflect God's goodness, we're all like a bunch of mirrors that point back to the source of that light. We reflect his light when we do good, and our being and our existence, we're reflecting God's goodness. And we each reflect God in a unique way that's unrepeatable. Every human being that ever lived reflects God uniquely in a way that can't be repeated by someone else. And I think along with that comes, each of us has our own unique charism. We have our own unique way of living out our call to love. We have our own unique gifts and talents. And I think because we each have unique gifts and talents, some people may be very drawn to, you know, creating, some people may be very drawn to mathematics, physics, STEM. Some people may be drawn to working quietly by themselves and, you know, behind the scenes doing things. Some people may be drawn to being artists and being creative. I think that we all have some degree of artistry on our soul because we are in the image and likeness of God, so we want to create something. I think that that's there for all of us. But the way that that's manifested, I think, varies. And I think God gives us a desire for the thing that he wants us to do in our life and our vocation. So some of us, I think, are very blessed with extra creative juices, so to speak, extra artistic perspective and ability to like really see deeply and convey that those aspects of life in a way that you can do it through the artistic medium. And I think that the way that great artists have been called, they have this special ability to see reality in a unique way and in a very deep way, more than maybe a lot of other people would have that, they wouldn't have that same vision. It's really to have a certain way of looking at life, a desire to convey that unique perspective, and which will be relatable to everyone, but not everyone's able to convey that as well. Like, I think there is a certain calling and a certain charism that God gives certain people to have that gift. And I think that you need to cultivate that. You need to work on honing the craft for whatever specific style you're trying to do. So if you're painting, you obviously want to be under mentorship of someone who does paintings. If you're a musician, you want to mentor under a musician that's going to train you in the craft. And filmmaking, you want to work with people that are good at it. And you can learn a lot on your own, self-taught, with filmmaking through YouTube videos and things of that nature, and reading and watching films critically. And I really think that, yeah, it's a combination of an inborn gift and capacity to begin with from the start that God has given you, and also you cultivate that and try to grow, because even if you're very talented, if you're not working on it, you won't reach full potential that you could if you're practicing and you're working hard. So I think it's definitely a combination of both nature and nurture.
Yeah. I wonder too, like, you know, just maybe people that don't have those kind of talents or gifts, but they still reflect maybe God and image and just enjoying it.
Yes. You know, that's why artists too, I mean, obviously it's because artists have a desire to create and express. Mm-hmm. That God just gives this like irrepressible like longing to want to portray a vision of reality that you find inspiring. And we do that to glorify God, because it's, and also because it's something that's enjoyable to create, but also because we want to share it with people, because we know others can benefit. If you're creating a beautiful film,
yeah,
you're making that for other people. And even if someone else, one of the audience members, couldn't do that themselves because they have different gifts, it's really rewarding to hear other people that are so moved by it. And even things that you're your own worst critic when you're an artist and you're creating things. So to hear someone else be like, oh, this is super awesome. And you're kind of like, oh, I thought it was okay, but really glad you liked it. You know, that definitely can happen. And it's so rewarding to have people that can just really appreciate, like you're saying, just to participate in it.
Yeah, and some people do that better than others. I like to, just for exercise sometimes, like go for a bike ride, and Sometimes I'll drive out in the country and go. And the other, I did that the other day, and it was beautiful spring here in Alabama, and it was in the woods, and it was, we've had rain, and it was cool, and just and the trees, everything was so fresh smelling. It was very shady, and I, on one level, it's like, okay, you do the ride, it's over. You seem like, okay, what do you have? But I thought just to enjoy it, you know, as God's gift to us. Something like is glorifying God, or just, you know, we just have some talent, maybe some physical talent, you know, just to go out and do it. You know, it's like, it's, you know, man fully alive, you know, it's glorifying God. And so I think, yeah, appreciating the arts and enjoying that, you know, can be a way of glorifying the Lord. And now, having said all that, you know, Hollywood today, and maybe even sometimes in the very beginning, even before the code, they had, you know, with like black and white talk, you know, right. sound. Even I was watching some kind of documentary, and it just seemed like there was this constant impulse to go south with this great new art form, you know.
And yes.
It's just crazy to me. Like, how could we just right out the gate misuse it? But I mean, obviously, it just feels like sometimes there's just such corruption and that, like, behind movies or sometimes stuff we watch or see that just seems kind of evil, you know, in many ways, and just destructive. How do you assess that? I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that Hollywood has an agenda to undermine traditional values in Catholicism. And I think it's just a self-reinforcing system, unfortunately. And there's just a satanic element there. Because film is so powerful, and because it can do so much good, even in the early encyclicals, you know, Pius XII, Paul VI, they were writing about film and its power and its tremendous capacity to influence people and affect lives. Because it has such a capacity to do good, when in the wrong hands, it can do tremendous evil to the detriment of all of society. And I think that it's unfortunate right now. It's very much run in the mainstream circles by people who don't have this Catholic imagination, far from it. There's this desire to kind of uproot that and make uprooting Catholicism seem very compelling, and make and you know, use artistic talent. There's pseudo talent going on, because it's like, at the craft, just isolated as a craft, there are people who are very good actors, there are people who are good directors, who know good writers, people who know how to write plots with good twists and turns that seem relatable, that seem compelling, that keep your interest, you know, you can empathize with the characters. But underlying that, with the philosophy, with the theology, there's going to be these seeds of doubt that are planted. I haven't seen the film, but I just did a podcast with Father Luke Fletcher and Brother Pius Gagné. They're CFRs at the Blue Army Shrine, and they talked about Conclave and about how it's unfortunate that all this talent, you know, great cinematography, great acting, you know, all these elements, the sets are beautiful and really fascinating. You know, they recreated the Sistine Chapel in the movie Conclave. Like, it's sad that all of this talent is ultimately going to waste because they're portraying a false image of the church. And while there's always some truth mixed in with falsity, this is how the devil gets you, because it always seems like, oh, there's some level of truth going on. There's some truth mixed in there. Like, you know, I believe that there's always going to be corruption. You know, within the church, there's, ever since the 12 apostles, you have Judas. You know, one of the 12 couldn't even make it and keep his head on straight. So it's like, you're always going to have someone going awry, unfortunately, and the devil's going to attack people that, you know, attack the most holy things. So you're going to have corruption in the church. So it's like, Hollywood is going to latch on to that, and then they're going to blow it completely out of proportion and not say, okay, yes, there's a reality of corruption that can happen within the church, but there's ultimately God still guiding, and goodness is fundamental, and the Holy Spirit is with the church. That's the element that you're never going to see with the mainstream Hollywood perspective. It's going to be, yes, the Catholic Church is evil, and guess what? It's the greatest story ever sold, not ever told. And they're going to say that, you know, it's basically create this idea, the Da Vinci Code, you see this as well, like the Catholic Church is this kind of like creepy sort of pseudo-Masonic underground institution that's just like evil. And then, you know, they have all the tricks in the book to try to create confusion and doubt and put weird twists on things.
The villain usually has the best line.
Yeah.
They get the beautiful people to play those parts.
Right.
They dress it up.
Right. So it's never a nuanced thing where it's like, okay, there can be corruption in the Catholic Church. 100% true. You can't deny that. But at the same time, they can't ever be like, that being said, there's still very good people in the Catholic Church. They're very holy people. And the church itself as an institution has the Holy Spirit guiding it, and there's truth. You're never going to get that perspective, unfortunately. And that's why Hollywood just continues to corrupt people. And because it's such a captivating medium, you know, it kind of bypasses your rational thought when you're just emotionally involved. You're like, yeah, there's all this evil going on. Yeah, of course the Catholic Church is bad. I don't need to think about it anymore. You know, this movie did my thinking for me, and it's very corrosive and very subtle and very tricky in that way. But that's how the devil works. And unfortunately, many of the shows and films that are being produced now are like tools of the devil to corrupt people, sadly, which is why we need to take it back. Because if we can get a hold on it as Catholics and portray truth, beauty, and goodness and put evil in its proper perspective and show how we ought to be living and show what it means to be truly alive and have authentic love rather than all this confusing just garbage that is just messing with people's heads ultimately and not leading them to deeper joy, fulfillment, and truth. If we can bring them to the truth with film and get a handle and actually start to have influence in film and TV and all that, again, with the media, we can do tremendous, tremendous, awesome work that's going to transform countless lives and souls. And people long for entertainment. People just want to, at the end of the day, just have something to watch that's fun and entertaining and feels relatable. And the sad thing is, there's just not enough good stuff being created to satisfy what people want to see. Yes, human beings, we have fallen desires, and we can go wayward very easily. But if you also provide good, people will have an option to choose that. And if they only have the bad to choose, they're kind of stuck, but they'll still choose it because that's what's there. And it's the low-hanging fruit, and they just want to watch something. And who doesn't want to watch a good film? It's just a problem when most of the films have bad agendas that are leading you away from the truth.
Yeah. At times, yeah, it seems a bad agenda even beyond reason. You know, it seemed like malevolence sometimes.
Yes.
But let's talk about that a second. You mentioned earlier, you know, if you're going to make a movie, say, about the Old Testament, but even the New, you know, obviously, but there's this presence of evil, right? There's sex and violence and lust and all this betrayal, and most of the kings were wicked. And you mentioned something about how John Paul II said about presenting evil. How should we do that?
Yes. In his letter to artists, he said, even when you're portraying the most unsettling aspects of evil and like the darkest parts of you know, the human soul and corruption, you do it in the light of the ultimate redemption of man, of God's grace, how God triumphs over evil, both cosmically and on the level of the individual soul. We all have the capacity to be redeemed. And I think that's what's sorely lacking in many films today. The modern perspective doesn't have this idea of Christ, far from it. It's a rejection of Christ, of logos, of that order of the universe. Mm-hmm. And when you rebel against that, it creates all sorts of problems. So what we need to do is bring back that perspective of there is an ultimate redemption. No one is too far for being saved. And things are never just so weird and gray that we can never sort out the truth at all. Yes, life is messy. And you have to be honest that the way that we encounter people and deal with things, there's a lot of gray areas of how prudentially we have to choose the good in life. And there can be a lot of confusing things. but we always have a fundamental truth that we can fall back on to allow us to help shape how to live the best we can, even in messy circumstances. Like, there's no denying that life is messy, but when we have Hollywood telling us life's messy and there's no ultimate truth, it's all kind of relative, and, you know, rejecting sort of an objective, when they reject an objective truth, that creates a ton of problems, and that's why people get stuck and lost and can't find their way out. So what we need to do is have an understanding that Christ died and conquered sin and death. And when we have that understanding, we can put evil in its context. We can understand that there's a way to portray evil with the proper restraint, obviously doing it in a way that's authentic and real. You don't want it to feel like overly fake or contrived, or like you're afraid to approach the topic of evil. Rather, it's doing it in a way that shows evil for what it is, and that doesn't entice people to participate in that evil by making it somehow glorified, or by like going too much in depth with trying to, have an over curiosity about it. Like, you want to show it for what it is, be real about it, be authentic about it, without trying to be like, let's glorify it and explore it and see what evil is really like. Because, okay, it might be bad, but it's kind of interesting. You don't want to like, you don't want to lead people down that road. And yeah. I think that Hollywood does that all the time, where it's like, okay, well, we kind of admit that it's bad, but let's kind of see what it is anyway. And then it's like, you're just leading people into this curiosity, which could send them down a dark road, and that's not good. And what we really want to do is show evil within the context. It has to be within the framework of there's a greater good that can come out of evil because of God's grace, and you can overcome this evil, and God will triumph. And you have to show that, and that's what's lacking. So it's putting it in the context of the light. There's just too much dark for dark's sake and exploring it. But we need to always shine, even if it's just a little tiny light into like this darkened space. The darkness doesn't drown out the light. The light always shines, and the darkness can't overcome it.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, oftentimes, you know, Hollywood can dress up evil and make it look spectacular or whatever, but they don't show you the moments of despair and everything. I know one time I was watching this documentary on like some of the cartel stuff going on the border and all this. And, you know, when you look at it, it's just really, the reality is so ugly and so sad, you know. And I guess that evil, maybe it's the license aspect of it that might appeal. You know, you can do whatever you want kind of thing. I guess that appeals to us. But I remember one time I was given a mission out in L.A., and Montebello, and I had a free afternoon. I wanted to shoot a video, like with the Hollywood sign in the background, and just talk about film and stuff. And I had read these statements of the popes, and John Paul wrote beautifully, and Paul the VI about film and stuff. But I remember at the end of it, it just kind of hit me. It was like, you know, different points in the Old Testament. It's like, they tell, you know, maybe it's when they were about to go into the promised land, it was one, you know, obey the commandments and take possession of the land. You have choose life or death.
Right.
It's before you. And I feel like with every new land, with every new technology, with every new art form, we always have that choice. Are we going to use this to serve life? It's powerful. Is it going to serve life or is it going to serve death? And so the Christian needs to be there and to bring all our values into it, and by sheer force of will, make that serve life, you know?
Right.
I feel like I do that with AI, like I do homily research. I'm forcing this tool, the devil, to give me good answers.
Yeah. Yep. That's but, great.
I think too, Hollywood has trouble, obviously, showing like holiness. And I have sympathy, you know, I guess sometimes it's just so foreign to some of these guys.
Right.
They show it in a cardboard, wooden kind of way, and they don't, like the movie Cabrini, I didn't watch it when it first came out because I thought it'd be kind of just like a feminist kind of trope or something.
Sure.
But I gotta say, I enjoyed the movie. And there's like no mention hardly of Jesus or the Sacred Heart. Or if you read her writings, you know, she's always talking about the Sacred Heart, the love of Jesus, and that wasn't well presented in the movie. But one thing I enjoyed was her intent on God, doing God's will, and I loved the way the actress played it. That she had like this kind of gravitas that she is just pursuing this,
right?
And to me, it's like a Mother Teresa that, you know, they had their goal they wanted to do. I think of like Mother Angelica, you know, wanting to inspire to build a network. It's like that she was focused on that. And I thought the movie did that well. And it even kind of called me to conversion. It's like, Mark, are you focused like that with God's will for your life? You know, do you have that? And the other thing about the movie, I was amazed at how much ground they could cover with scenes. That they, you know, they'd have one scene that would capture like a lot of material for her life. That I thought was well done. Did you see that?
I didn't see it, no.
Yeah.
But I can see what you're saying. Like portraying, that's why I think film is so powerful, because you can portray mm-hmm. people making choices in different contexts in a heightened way that's very compelling. Mm-hmm. And I think what you were saying about the Cabrini film is you see her choosing her vocation to serve God, to love God, and do it in mm-hmm. a doggedly determined way. And then this inspires you in your own life. This is why film is so powerful. Like yeah. you want to imitate that good that you saw, and you kind of, that memory of that story, that very immersive story that you watched, it lives on mm-hmm. in your mind, in your memory. So that's part of the magic of film.
And I think it highlights something you touched upon too, like what the actor brings to it. Because I guess what struck me is like she's hitting these obstacles, but she's not taking it personally. Even though they might be insulting like Italians and stuff, it's like she doesn't get angry, you know? She might say, I think she did have kind of a line at the end of it or something about something, but even that wasn't like this vengeful kind of thing. It was just kind of a statement of truth. And what, how would you describe what the actor brings to it? Because there's no doubt we love certain actors.
I mean,
there are good actors. There's not such good right. actors. What is it? They have a way of bringing something new and energetic and powerful to the character. Like they do something. I hear directors say that, you know, what he did with that character.
Yes.
How do you describe that?
I think it's a gift from God that certain people have to really portray the reality well. Like it doesn't feel fake. The best acting I ever see is the type of acting that makes me forget that I'm watching a movie at all yeah. and makes me so immersed in the story that it just feels like these are real people that are going through these situations. This is how they're reacting and feeling at this time. And because their performance is subtle, it's nuanced, they have this life and this depth of showing all the facets of what the human experience is. When they're able to do that, I think that just makes for a phenomenal performance. And it really is just a gift that some actors and actresses have to portray the reality of the human condition in a way that doesn't feel at all contrived. That's completely just it's just real. And because it resonates with us because we look at it and we go, that's life. That's how life is. This is what would happen in this situation. And it transports you to an ethical situation where you can imagine yourself. What the magic of it is too, is that you can empathize with them and put yourself in their shoes because you see it as a real situation. You're not seeing it as a film, as a performance. You're just living in that moment with that character. And then there's some sort of like aspect of God's grace too, I would say, that's happening there, because whenever there's a portrayal of some aspect of life that's truly beautiful, that's going to move you closer to God, God is working through that. So he works through those performances to show the reality, to show the depth of what goes on in the human heart. And it could be through subtle things, just as a glance, a gesture, a movement, and you know, in those moments you're transported to the reality, the deeper reality of what's going on. So there's the realism, there's that heightened sense of realism as well, of like the deeper mystery of our human experience, because you're watching it on screen, you're seeing the nuances of the actor's performance. And it's really what's breathing the life into the story, because you can have the best story, but it's not acted well, it's not going to work, it's gonna fall flat. But when it's acted in a way that feels completely harmonious with the rest of the aspects of the production, it's really like magic. It's something spiritual. It's awesome.
Yeah, you feel like you go, like you mentioned layers before, it's like you're going to a new layer depth. You're going to that more. It's like they're revealing, you know, the actor might be portraying this situation, like this suffering or this conversion point, and it's like you're able to enter into that bigger reality behind this yes. one character, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's an incredible quality. But thank you so much, John Paul, for talking with us.
And, of course.
Great. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Father. It's a joy to be here and to chat with you.